You're listening to We Are SDS, a podcast from the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to We Are SDS. I'm your host, Professor Joe Kane. This is episode 28. So ChatGPT arrived in November last year. That wasn't the first appearance of generative AI, but it sure landed with a boom. Within a month, it felt like it was everywhere. First reaction from staff was resistance and loud cries of cheating. It's safe to say that we gave it a big no. But quickly, that thinking turned around. AI is all over education these days, and students are keen to use it. That's made 2023 a year of transformation. We're asking, how do we use AI as a positive? How do we reshape our coursework to push creativity to the next level, knowing that AI is out there? This episode of the podcast was created by Mandy Hine, reporting for the SDS Newsroom. Yep, the SDS Newsroom is back. What's that? Well, here in SDS, we want to give our students work experience in science communication. So each summer, we set up as many paid internships as we can, and we work with students to create content for publications. We also help them create podcasts on any subject they choose. We want about 30 minutes. We want interviews. We want something STS. But most of all, we want their ideas and their creativity. Mandy's episode today is a great start to the set for this year. It's rich with ideas and with hard work. She runs the show today, which means I get to sit back and just listen. Hurrah! Here's Mandy, and I'll see you on the other side.
I took Professor John Agar's module, Thinking About Technology, in the fall of 2023. We explored questions like, can machines think like humans? Enter the famous Turing test, designed by British computer scientist and mathematician Alan Turing in 1950. So, a simplified version of the test goes a bit like this. Imagine you're having a conversation through a computer screen. If the responses from the computer are so good that you can't tell if you're talking to a human or a machine, then the machine has passed the Turing test. And according to Turing, if a machine can pass this test, this means that it has achieved human intelligence. One day, during Professor Agar's class, a student answered a question posed to the class, only to reveal at the end of the class that they used ChatGPT to generate the response. We were all quite surprised, to say the least, and it was certainly my first real-life taste of the magic of AI. And it got me thinking, how will AI challenge the traditional ways of teaching, the value of education as we know it, and shape classrooms in the future? Let's find out. But let's start with the basics first. What exactly is artificial intelligence, or AI? According to Professor Rose Luckin, an expert in learner-centered design at the UCL Knowledge Lab, AI defines what machines can do in terms of human intelligence. Remember the Turing test? That's where this philosophy originated from. Luckin describes AI as an interdisciplinary study of intelligence, combining cognitive psychology, philosophy, computer science, mathematics, logic, and linguistics. When we talk about AI, we often use it as an umbrella term, but in reality, there are two types, AGI and ANI. AGI, or Artificial General Intelligence, is like Jarvis, Iron Man's human-like AI assistant that can complete a wide range of tasks. Suitably, Jarvis actually stands for just a rather very intelligent system. It's also the main source of existential fear about AI. But most experts believe we are very far from achieving this kind of advanced intelligence, if it is even possible at all. However, the AI we commonly encounter today is ANI, or Artificial Narrow Intelligence. This is a type of AI that excels in specific tasks, like what's used in Grammarly or Google Maps, social media for personalized content recommendations and ads, and of course, ChatGPT. Now, there are plenty of other terms thrown around in the AI world, such as machine learning, deep learning, neural networks, and algorithms. Let's quickly differentiate these terms from AI. Machine learning is one way of implementing AI. The machine reads a lot of data and learns that some input A leads to an output of B. It is a way that machines learn to become more intelligent. Deep learning is a more advanced form of machine learning that is inspired by the human brain's neural networks. With deep learning, machines are more self-taught and can learn from more complex data. Algorithms are step-by-step instructions written in programming code to enable machines to learn in the first place. In our day-to-day lives, AI used to be quite inconspicuous, like having Grammarly proofread your writing or using Google Maps for directions. But with the emergence of ChatGPT and DALL-E, AI has taken a giant leap forward. There is so much exciting potential just brimming under the surface. Here's a fun thought experiment. As you go through your day, try pretending you're in a sci-fi movie and imagine all the ways that even limited ANI can help make your life easier. The potential for AI in education, specifically, is enormous. However, before we explore more of that, with great power comes great responsibility, as the saying goes. The responsibility part is where STS, Science and Technology Studies, comes into play. If AI is the interdisciplinary study of intelligence, as Luckin describes, then STS can be seen as the interdisciplinary study of technology, including AI. The STS perspective is easily spotted in discussions surrounding AI because of the tech's disruptive and existential fear-evoking nature. It forces us to reflect on its profound implications on our lives and society at large, the economy, politics, education, and at the core, what it means to be human. What makes our lives meaningful if one day machines can complete most of our tasks better than us, which Oxford philosopher Toby Ord predicts there is a 1 in 2 chance of this happening by the end of the century. So the odds aren't really in our favor. Any piece of technology is not a neutral, passive object. It is influenced by us, human values, politics, history, while we are influenced by it. When it comes to AI, there are individuals who may be hesitant or adverse, those who are curious and intrigued, and those who are advocates and are already using it to their advantage in their daily work. In my conversations with people at UCL, one common feeling emerges, a general sense of overwhelm and uncertainty and unease that is mostly shoved under the rug for the moment. I talked to special guest Rich Osborne, an important member of the UCL team that helps UCL figure out how to deal with AI. He's facing this problem, or opportunity depending on how you look at it, head on.
So my name's Dr. Richard Osborne. I'm what they call the Faculty Learning Technology Lead for the Faculty of Mathematical and Physical Sciences at UCL. Each one of us in the role is a specialist in education, in technology, and pedagogy, but also in the discipline. So I have a background in education. I have a PhD in education, but I'm also a qualified physics teacher. So I know about pedagogy and about teaching. And I'm also a technologist. I've been working for many, many years with digital technologies. So it's this interesting blend of experience that we all have that allows people in my role, the faculty learning technology lead role, to speak the languages of all the critical people in digital education. How AI technologies might fit into what we're doing in the faculty is a challenge. I mean, we are pretty much mostly looking at ChatGPT at the moment. Because it is so prevalent and a lot of people have been nervous about how it might be used, it's the one that's being used most. And of course, that is fundamentally about language. I mean, of the different AIs that are out there, most of them, they're based on what we call large language model technologies. So they really only work with language. They've been trained on languages, and so that's all they can work with, these languages. And SDS is naturally is a department which uses a lot of language. It tends to be, like I say, more discursive. So when we're thinking how it might be used, in SDS in particular, it's things like ChatGPT. And, you know, there's various ways we're thinking what it might be helpful. I mean, people often talk about a study buddy, for example, the idea that, you know, your tutor as a student isn't always available to you, but you always have questions when you're working and trying to understand some new topic you're being taught. So you can potentially go to someone at ChatGPT and ask it for clarification over something you've just been taught in your lectures. And it'll usually give you a pretty straight down the road, accurate response. I mean, ChatGPT knows an awful lot about what has been written in most of our disciplines, certainly within faculty. So it knows all the key thinking, and it can give you the middle of the road kind of answer. And I think what's critical about it is it's personal as well. It's, you know, all the students are going to struggle with different concepts. As you know, one of the key theories of learning is the idea of constructivism. And constructivism basically says that each individual constructs their own understanding of meaning based on what they already know and based on what they're listening to. So we all have to create our own interpretation that is then just laid down in long-term memory and become something we then know. But everyone's going to be different on that though. So the AI can actually fill in that difference. It can be there in that different way for every different student. UCL's response to it, the AI that's happening now, let's say we've got some very experienced people in UCL who have been studying this for a long time. So although ChatGPT and things have arrived, it seems out of the blue and you know, suddenly no one was expecting this. And yet when you talk to some of the colleagues who have been working in this field for a long time, this is not news to them. So we have set up here an AI expert group. I'm not part of the AI expert group myself. And so these guys are meeting and they're doing this on top of all their regular work, and they're looking at all the issues and they're producing guidance. So they've already produced guidance for students and staff on how we think you should or should not be using AI. And we're taking a very, I think, a pragmatic and a realistic approach to this, realizing that this is not something you can ban, for example. I know some countries and universities try to ban, but of course, there's always way around bans. So that's really not going to work. We look at the detectors and we said, well, they don't really work anyway. So we're not going to worry about detectors. So that's, you know, we're saying don't put things in detectors and don't try and use them. It's not really worth your time. We are creating guidance on how to use them effectively. I'm running workshops with one of my colleagues, for example, across all departments to help our colleagues understand how, you know, ways in which they can use it, ways in which they can help students to use it, and ways in which they can use it as staff members. And in fact, just yesterday or day before, we've just had a whole load of new projects approved, or hopefully going through the approval process, because the UCL has decided to put some money aside to do some really quite fast and agile investigations of exactly what AI can do in individual departments. So I've got, for example, 8 projects have been put forward from my faculty. And these projects are in maths, these projects are in chemistry, in space and climate physics, just to give you an example of a 3. And these are working with students, these projects, to try and look at, okay, these are the assessments or the teaching you've been doing. Let's see what AI can do in this context. And so these are very quick. They're going to be a turnaround in a month or two. And they're going to give us some really good data about exactly how these AIs may or may not help in specific contexts in teaching and learning. And of course, this is happening all over UCL. So yeah, we are acting fast, but we're acting calmly, I think, and we're acting responsibly. And I think quite a few other unis are looking at us and saying, oh, that's not bad advice. And they're looking, copying, you know, and looking to us for guidance. And rightly so. As I say, we've got some of the best thinkers in the world on this. So.
AI, like ChatGPT, is also forcing schools to re-examine current education practices to evolve with the needs of our society. It's making us question what we truly value in our education system. Are our assignments and exams really testing what we want to test, what we want students to learn?
This has certainly reawakened, shall we say, conversations about why we assess and how we assess and what's the purpose of assessment. And I think, you know, people in certainly not so much in maps maybe, but elsewhere, when we've relied so heavily on essays as a main form of assessment for so long, you've got to question why that has been, because maybe there are better things that you can do to assess people. And one of the areas I've worked in specially is called authentic assessment. I ran a large project on this for about 3 years. And we delve deeply into what it meant to do authentic assessment. And it's about authentic assessment, if you don't know, is an assessment that's more like the kind of way you'd be assessed if you're in work. Because people don't realize it, because in your work, you're assessed all the time. You have an awful lot of peer assessment going on. You have, you know, your line manager looking after you, checking your work. You often have to present in front of colleagues. And that's a form of assessment, if you like, because you're judged, as it were, you know, how well you perform on these things. You have maybe a performance review every year where you have to kind of be evaluated, see how you're doing. You know, there's loads of assessment in the world of work, but it's different. It's more ongoing. It's more collaborative. It works more with peers. It creates new different products. And that goes back to my idea of product again. You end up having to produce different things to demonstrate how you're doing your work. I mean, we're effectively doing something now as this podcast is a productive thing. I am producing something which I could be judged by. And this is a valid, you know, it's more of an authentic then form of assessment. Because my peers might listen to this and say, oh, no, he's talking garbage. Or they might say, oh, he's talking garbage. It's really interesting. But, you know, I'm willing to put myself out there and be judged in that way.
Luckin, the AI education expert at UCL that I mentioned earlier, suggests that we shift our current knowledge-based education system to an intelligence-based one that emphasizes critical thinking, creativity, and adaptability, rather than rote memorization and preparing for traditional standardized tests. The trend with personalized education has also been on the rise, especially with the internet, when we all have access to factual and non-factual information with a click of a button. AI seems to be the new technological development that has pushed education and assessments as we know it over the edge and in need of change. Still, this doesn't solve the primary problem facing educators now, which is academic integrity. In other words, cheating and plagiarism. It's very hard, if not impossible, to detect. UCL's approach is not a strict ban, but an ongoing conversation to figure out how students can work with technology to enhance their work and education, rather than replace it. We often think of technology as disrupting our lives, which it does, but technology isn't just something that happens to us or that we must adapt to. This common misconception is called technological determinism, where technology determines or shapes our society. The truth is, we as a society also have the power to shape the technology we use, which is often underestimated or overlooked. This is the theory of the social construction of technology, or SCOT for short. We are active participants rather than passive users of technology. And that's exciting, because it means that how AI technologies may show up more and more in our lives in the near future is not preordained. We can decide.
So, anyone who's been paying attention for the last few months has been seeing headlines like this, especially in education. The thesis has been students are going to be using ChatGPT and other forms of AI to cheat, do their assignments, they're not going to learn, and it's going to completely undermine education as we know it. Now, what I'm going to argue today is not only are there ways to mitigate all of that, if we put the right guardrails, we do the right things, we can mitigate it, but I think we're at the cusp of using AI for probably the biggest positive transformation that education has ever seen. And the way we're going to do that is by giving every student on the planet an artificially intelligent but amazing personal tutor. And we're going to give every teacher on the planet an amazing artificially intelligent teaching assistant.
That was Sal Khan and the beginning of a TED Talk he gave in Vancouver, Canada in April 2023. He's one of the strongest, most popular, positive voices of generative AI in education out there. If you're a student, his voice might have been a familiar one. He's the creator of Khan Academy, and the videos on his website have become a familiar source for many students, myself included, playing a significant role in supplementing our education. I think this indicates that something is lacking in the way many students are taught. KhanMigo is the name of the AI. It's capable of all sorts of things, being a math tutor, a debate coach using the Socratic method to teach, a writing partner and editor. It can even impersonate a classical literary character to help students delve deeper into their assigned reading. KhanMigo is like a magical sandbox in which learning becomes play. It's a safe space in which students can create, imagine, make mistakes, and learn from them. Rich mentions this more accurate or responsible kind of AI compared to ChatGPT could be possible at UCL. Reid Hoffman, the co-founder of LinkedIn, also lends another major positive voice in the mainstream AI debate. Here is a clip from his interview with Emily Chang, a journalist at Bloomberg.
The speed at which we will integrate it into our lives will be faster than we integrated the iPhone into our lives. There's going to be a co-pilot for every profession. And if you think about that, that's huge.
And not professional activities, because it's going to write my kids' papers, right? My kids' high school papers?
Yes, although the hope is that in the interaction with it, they'll learn to create much more interesting papers.
Listening to influential figures like Khan and Hoffman, it's easy to be captivated by their narratives. However, it's crucial to approach these stories with a critical STS mindset. One aspect to be wary of is the tendency for these narratives to be techno-utopian, presenting science and technology as the ultimate solution to all our problems. It's important to recognize that this perspective is oversimplistic and often biased, particularly in favor of the elite of Silicon Valley, who stand to benefit financially if we are led to believe that the technology they're creating, which only they have the knowledge and expertise to understand, as it happens, will solve all our problems. While science, and in association, the technology it enables, is often regarded as an objective endeavor, it's crucial to acknowledge that it too is influenced by historical, social, political, and other human factors. Emily Chang also asks Hoffman about his perspective on AI in general.
You have been on the ground floor of some of the biggest tech platform shifts in history, the beginnings of the internet, mobile. Do you think AI is going to be even bigger?
I think so. It builds on the internet, mobile, cloud, data. All of these things come together to make AI work. And so that causes it to be the crescendo, the addition to all of us. I mean, one of the problems with the current discourse is that it's too much of the fear-based versus hope-based. Imagine a tutor on every smartphone for every child in the world. That's possible. That's line of sight from what we see with current AI models today.
It's apparent that Hoffman shares the same excitement for the possibilities of AI in education as Sal Khan with his KhanMigo AI study buddy. Personalized education is certainly one of the most exciting potential uses of AI. If AI is the next big revolutionary technology, as other experts have also predicted, then it is crucial that it is beneficial for humanity. An open letter on AI written in 2015 calls for exactly this, which many people, including Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking, as well as UCL professors from our own department, Jack Stilgo, signed. A popular concept discussed in STS is technological momentum, or the idea that once a new technology becomes more popular and more integrated into our society, it generates its own momentum and becomes increasingly difficult to change or redirect. As AI continues to advance and likely become ever more prevalent in our lives, it is important that its rapid development is properly monitored and regulated so that we can reap all its benefits and avoid its potential harm. After all, the essence of what it means to be human is at stake. I think Hoffman addresses this underlying existential fear of AI quite eloquently.
In the end, I think it's really bigger than essay writing. You don't just write essays. You also write software code, business plans, pitch decks, teacher lesson plans. And so I think the broader concern is, again, how does humanity retain its capacity to do things in the AI age so we remain capable, productive, and engaged creators of our own destinies? Because as much as we might want to avoid drudge work and repetition, human beings have always been makers and storytellers. And in making things, whether it's a new tool or artwork or whatever, the drudge work and the repetition are often an important part of the process. In part, it's what gives a sense of accomplishment, a sense of mastery. You have the vision and the persistence and the patience to paint a painting one brushstroke at a time, to write and revise an essay over and over until you feel like you finally nailed it. That process, that's a lot of what it means to be human.
The exciting aspect of delving into AI is that we find ourselves at the forefront of knowledge in this rapidly evolving field. Many of the resources and insights I've come across have been published within the last few years, and some even within the last few months. This dynamic nature of the field makes it all the more thrilling to explore and learn about, and maybe even have a hand in changing.
You see, no cause for panic. AI's just another tool in the box. As with all those other tools, tutors just need to think a bit about what they want to use it for and what kinds of creativity we want to use it to promote. Thanks to Mandy for her research and for her hard work putting this episode together. Also, thanks to her guests. Great stuff. Mandy also is one of the student journalists writing stories for this year's STS Alchemy, our annual free magazine. That'll be out later this summer. Did I mention it was free? If you know someone who wants to build a career in science communication, or someone who wants to take on big questions about emerging tech, ask them to get in touch. Both topics fit well under the umbrella of Science and Technology Studies, or STS. We're a thriving community here at UCL, and there's plenty of room for more. Our theme music is Rollin' at 5 by Kevin MacLeod. It's available online at filmmusic.io. Other credits are in the show notes. We Are STS is a production of the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. If you want to find out more about the show, listen to past episodes, or give us some feedback, just visit us online. Here's the address, so write this down. It's ucl.ac.uk/STS/podcast. Well, that's it for today. Thanks for coming along. We'll have another episode ready soon, including more from this year's STS Newsroom. Until then, just remember, there's knowledge to be found just about everywhere, and that together, we are STS. Bye now. You've been listening to We Are STS, a podcast from the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. We're on most every podcast platform, so subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating. That'll remind the algorithms to give us a boost too. Plus, it'll bring smiles to all of us in STS HQ.